From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Another delay for peace talks on Syria. This was the UN Special Envoy on Syria at a press conference Monday.
Due to the intense disagreements, frankly, and different opinions on who should be on the list, the actual beginning of the talks, which was meant to be today, 25 January, have been delayed.
That was Stefan de Mistura at the Monday press conference, laying out some of the difficulties on the road ahead.
There are political risks, and you will hear them as soon as you will hear the fact that I'm announcing that we intend to do them on the 29th and that I will be issuing invitations tomorrow. But those political risks and tensions and positioning and pre-positioning should be also taken into account that our line is, and the Security Council has been clear, no preconditions, at least to start the talks and while the talks start. The rest is open. It's going to be uphill. They are not in an agreement yet, but we are all feeling that what has been happening in the past and what also the region and the main stakeholders feel, the time has come to at least try hard to produce an outcome.
A grand jury in Texas that was investigating accusations of misconduct against Planned Parenthood has instead indicted two members of an anti-abortion group that made undercover videos of that organization. Prosecutors in Harris County, Texas, said one of the leaders of the Center for Medical Progress, an anti-abortion group that made secretly recorded videos purporting to show Planned Parenthood officials trying to illegally profit from the sale of fetal tissue, had been indicted on a charge of tampering with a governmental record, a felony, and a misdemeanor charge related to purchasing human organs. That leader, David DeLeiden, 27-year-old director of the center, had posed as a biotechnology representative to infiltrate Planned Parenthood affiliates and secretly record his efforts to procure tissue for research. Another center employee, Sandra Merritt, 62 years old, was indicted on a felony charge of tampering with a governmental record. Those record tampering charges accused the two of making and presenting fake California driver's licenses with the intent to defraud for an April meeting at Planned Parenthood in Houston. Abortion opponents claimed that the videos, which were released starting in July of 2015, revealed that Planned Parenthood was engaged in the illegal sale of body parts, a charge that the organization has denied. Harris County District Attorney Devon Anderson issued a statement Monday saying that the grand jury had cleared Planned Parenthood of any wrongdoing. Texas Governor Greg Abbott also released a statement which said that Monday's announcement in Harris County would not impact the state's ongoing investigation. He's a killer, a pervert, and a crook. That's a summary of the latest barrage in Washington's propaganda war against Russia's President Vladimir Putin. As we reported earlier, a retired British judge, Sir Robert Owen, announced last week that a report he had compiled concluded that President Putin probably had a hand in the death of Alexander Litvinenko, a former Russian security officer who died almost 10 years ago. Owen announced his conclusions to much fanfare, despite the fact that, as even the New York Times admitted, his report, quote, cited no hard evidence that Mr. Putin had been aware of the plot to kill Litvinenko or had sanctioned it, close quote. Owen's report also alleged that Litvinenko was killed to prevent him from providing evidence that President Putin was a pedophile. The latest public relations assault on Russia's president came Monday with the claim broadcast on the BBC by a senior U.S. Treasury official that President Putin has been enriching himself at the public trough. Adam Zubin, acting Treasury Secretary for Terrorism and Financial Crimes, said in an interview with the BBC's Panorama program that Russia's president has been amassing secret wealth for years. The Kremlin Tuesday brushed aside the comments. Putin has characterized Western press reports about his allegedly immense wealth, including that he was the world's richest man, as nonsense. The latest round of sensational claims about Russia's president, who polls repeatedly show is the most popular political figure on Earth, came after a Senate Foreign Relations Committee in November determined that the U.S., the home of Madison Avenue and Hollywood, faced a threat to its national security from what it called Russian propaganda. This was U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, as he opened the November 5th subcommittee hearing, which he chaired.
I'm new to the Senate in 2011, traveled the world in my business. So I haven't been involved in things like Radio Free Europe and Voice of America and understanding exactly how those broadcasting outlets were really functioning or not functioning. But my sense is they obviously played a key role during the Cold War. But once the Berlin Wall fell, it seems like we declared victory and stopped our efforts. Based on testimony, it sounds like we were starting to ramp those things up again, but from my standpoint, we can't ramp them up fast enough.
For his part, Senator Johnson doesn't only see the devil in Moscow, he also sees him here in the U.S., including in the Hollywood children's film, The Lego Movie.
I actually called a gentleman, it was probably a couple months ago, that was so upset when he took his children to an animated movie, 6 and 7 year old children to an animated movie, and guess who the villain was? Evil Mr. Business Person, okay? So it's insidious, it's that propaganda starts very early, and it's gonna be very corrosive to really what makes this country great.
However, Hollywood has actually been deeply involved in American propaganda. The voice of Walter Cronkite provided the narration over scenes recreated by Hollywood actors portraying a Cold War version of communist tyranny, including the Berlin Wall and Soviet military parades. The following is from the propaganda film made in 1957 called Towers of Truth, which purported to show how money collected from the first so-called Crusade for Freedom in 1950 led to the establishment of Radio Free Europe the following year. The Crusade for Freedom was an American propaganda campaign which operated from 1950 until 1960. Its public goal was to raise funds for Radio Free Europe, but it actually served to conceal the CIA's funding of Radio Free Europe and to generate public support within the U.S. for Washington's Cold War.
The avowed goal of the communists is world domination. By force and subterfuge, the Soviet Union succeeded in conquering the people of Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and Poland. Protected by their armies and the secret police, the leaders of the Kremlin are using every means at the disposal of a modern dictatorship in their effort to warp and mold the 70 million people in these countries into instruments of their power, into slaves who can then be used to enslave others.
Wayne Madsen is an American journalist, author, and columnist specializing in intelligence and international affairs. He's the author of the blog Wayne Madsen Report, at www.waynemadsenreport.com. We spoke with him about the allegations contained in the Owen Report and about the recent stepping up of anti-Russian propaganda by the U.S. in general via Skype Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, this should come as no surprise. It's part of the international campaign against Putin, against the Russian government. It's clearly got the fingerprints of Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was put in jail in Russia for being a tax cheat,
right,
and a fraudster.
Right.
This is the guy that used to own Yukos, the big oil and gas company. And Khodorkovsky was found guilty in a Russian court and sentenced to prison. But Putin let him out early, along with a guy named Nevzhlin. The proviso on Khodorkovsky was that he could not engage in any attempts to overthrow the Russian government after he got out. So what does Khodorkovsky do? He immediately hightails it to Israel and London. These are the two centers of all the attempts to overthrow the Russian government. And in London, of course, we get this judge, and these judges, of course, are a dime a dozen. You know, they go to the Old Bailey in London. They see some old guy there sleeping, some judge who has nothing else to do with his time, and they tell him, hey, take off your powdered wig and come with us. We got an inquiry. We want you to head up. So we saw this with the same thing with the investigation, the inquiries on the death of Dr. David Kelly, who everybody knows was murdered on the orders. We talk about murders. Let's talk about Kelly, who was murdered on the orders of Tony Blair because he knew that the WMDs, so-called WMDs in Iraq, were fairy dust.
Right.
You know, that if they want to look at murders, let's look at the murder of a British citizen and not some this guy Litvinenko, Alexander Litvinenko. He was dealing with the Chechen terrorists, the Islamic Emirate, you know, the same people who are now fighting on the side of the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. He was tied up with Boris Berezovsky, another Russian oligarch who left Russia so he would avoid prosecution. And Berezovsky, of course, knew all about Litvinenko. But a few years ago, Berezovsky apologized to Putin in a letter. He said, I want to come back to Russia. But of course, if he had gone back to Russia and told Putin about the whole operation involving Litvinenko and these other oligarchs, Khodorkovsky and the rest of them, all carrying around Israeli passports, that would be very damaging to these people. So, of course, what happened? Berezovsky was found hanging in his bathroom. Of course, the British authorities ruled it a suicide. Now, we know that when Litvinenko supposedly picked up this polonium in his system, that polonium was also found in Berezovsky's office in London.
Now, let me give a little context here, because Khodorkovsky just essentially got a really nice give from the U.S. government. It appears that he is being allowed to essentially privatize Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and Voice of America. They signed some kind of contract with his media entity that has must-carry provisions on it.
Yeah, his son Pavel Khodorkovsky heads up an NGO called Institute of Modern Russia in New York, and they're putting out some slick web magazine that is now signed, as you say, this joint agreement with Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. And of course, the CIA gave that whole operation in Munich and Prague some years ago to George Soros. So we see who's arrayed against Putin.
Right.
His enemies are my enemies, as far as I'm concerned. And his enemies should be every American, loyal American's enemies.
Right.
But the power of the media is such that, you know, Khodorkovsky and Litvinenko are painted as these saints when, in fact, in the case of Litvinenko, he was dealing with some pretty unsavory people, including Chechen terrorists.
You know,
the same crowd that was allegedly behind the Boston Marathon bombing, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. And we have a little timeline to follow here, too, because from the creation of Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, they were prohibited from using basically our taxpayer money to propagandize us. They were only allowed to propagandize outside the United States, and that changed last year, or 2014 maybe. Now you've got Khodorkovsky cutting a deal with the Broadcast Board of Governors within the context of the Broadcast Board of Governors saying that the U.S., the home of Madison Avenue in Hollywood, okay, is losing a propaganda war to CCTV from China, Telesur from Venezuela, Press TV from Iran, and RT from Russia, so that some affirmative step has to be taken to counter this barrage of propaganda. They can't use Madison Avenue or Hollywood, I guess, but they, in addition to that, are now in bed with Khodorkovsky, and this investigation, quote unquote, is like their first blast of propaganda.
Yeah, I mean, this has been what's been going on for a long time. You know, the one thing I would imagine that they don't mention in this report are some pretty unsavory people that were associated with the Italian mob, the mafia, that were friends of Litvinenko. There was a guy named Mario Scaramella. What happened when this Litvinenko first surfaced in England? It was discovered that his colleague, this guy Scaramella, was trying to raise the specter of the KGB, which doesn't even exist any longer. The KGB being active in Italy, and it was really an attempt to damage the Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi and other leftist politicians. So a lot of money was being smuggled by people like Berezovsky and Litvinenko through San Marino, which is this little republic inside Italy where these Kosher Nostra and Italian mobsters have a lot of activity centered in banks and whatnot. So, you know, if they want to talk about a real investigation of this network, it doesn't lead to at least to Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's talk about the real boogeyman here.
You know what else is cute about it? The report itself has a section where the bulk of the evidence is stored that was used for the inquirer, Sir Robert Owen, to come to the conclusion that probably Putin was involved in directing the killing. And by the way, no one touches whether or not someone who's in bed with Chechen terrorists, you know, is they're allowed to kill them from Washington. I guess he should have used a drone instead. But the evidence is called closed evidence, and there's a rider that says closed evidence, and that's that. It's not available for public view, and it's not also available to those who are charged.
Yeah, maybe Owen should indict a ham sandwich next. Because he seems like he's just like a, you know, any U.S. prosecutor based on grand jury's information, which is always protected. You know, they always say they can indict a ham sandwich.
Right, unless they're a police officer, of course, then.
That's different then.
Right.
But this whole issue about Litvinenko, he was clearly a triple agent, not even a double agent. He had been with the KGB, then he went to work for the successor organization called the SVR. Then he started dealing with the Mossad. Then he started dealing with this Berezovsky operation. Of course, MI6 knew all about that because Berezovsky was using Britain with their permission as a base. So since when have we turned on the tier works for triple agents? I mean, you know, it's like mercenaries. You know, people cry when some mercenary who works for DynCorp or one of these other operations in the U.S., Blackwater, when one of them is killed. Nobody ever cared about mercenaries being killed in the 1960s in Congo,
right. Yeah.
or wherever else they were operating. I mean, these are basically the lowest of the low. And who cares about them?
In the food chain, yeah. Well, and it's interesting because apparently there's a recommendation that's made by Sir Robert Owen at the conclusion of this investigation. However, it says under Section 2.24, Part 7 concerns the closed evidence that I have received. Because of the sensitivity of this evidence, I do not anticipate that any of this part other than the introductory section will be published. This part also contains the single recommendation that I have made. Because the recommendation relates to the closed material, I do not expect it to be published. So he recommends something, but we don't know what that is either.
No, and you won't. And the thing, it's also interesting to point out that one of the things that Litvinenko is pushing, along with Berezovsky, is this these so-called Mitrokhin documents. Mitrokhin was a KGB official, and there's these Mitrokhin papers that came out of the archives in Moscow that are supposedly talk about all the dirty tricks done by the Soviet Union during the Cold War. And so we see the same, Russia was accused of trying to kill Pope John Paul II. They were accused of all kinds of things. And now they're using the same type of propaganda against the Russian government. The same exact thing they did against the Soviet Union. And so this this link between Litvinenko and Scaramella and others, especially in Italy, I think is a smoking gun to show that this whole operation is designed to make Putin look bad and try to get him probably on some sort of no visa list, so he can't he can't visit a countries abroad or freeze his assets. I think that's the end game here.
That which is amazing because. If, as he travels around the world, he seems to be a hell of a lot more popular than any U.S. politician.
I'd take him over Obama any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So at least I know. at least I know. Where he sits on certain certain issues, which I find myself in more agreement with him than not.
How do you think this fits into the big picture? What do you think is the game that's afoot, aside from trying to isolate Putin individually, personally, as president of Russia, and even Russia? Why are they doing that?
Well, it's interesting. I just looked, every year the State Department puts out a Santa Claus naughty and nice list on countries and how they voted, how often they voted against the United States, and how often they voted with us. And for poor countries, woe be it to them to vote against us, because they're going to lose foreign aid and be subject to all kinds of things like Soros color revolutions. But Russia only voted with the U.S. like 25% of the time. China, incidentally, only voted with the U.S. 11% of the time. but we see an attempt by this administration to demonize both Russia and China. China over their supposed military threat to some sandbars in the South China Sea.
Right.
And Russia over exercising its right of self-defense against a Nazi regime that sprang up in Kiev thanks to people like Victoria Nuland. And
Khodorkovsky too. Khodorkovsky was, on the Maidan and spent a decent amount of time and money trying to deny that they were Nazis involved.
Yeah. And he—that's where he violated his agreement on being released from prison.
Right.
He immediately violated by showing up in Kiev. So when I looked into this whole Litvinenko thing, I found out he was tied up with this network that involved a lot of people who formerly worked for the CIA. And now we have this deal made between Khodorkovsky and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, to basically join forces and pumping out all this anti-Russian propaganda. It's amazing though how none of this information is being picked up in our media, but that doesn't surprise me. They haven't picked up anything for a couple of decades now.
No, instead they'll be carrying the stuff that they generate as news. I mean, they are now allowed to source Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, and Radio Liberty, and a lot of the content's going to be generated by Khodorkovsky.
Yeah, that's right. But Litvinenko was tied up with this huge CIA operation, and it involved this guy, as mentioned, Mario Scaramella, who was called a Magliaro Napolitano, right? He was like a big mafia kingpin, and then he had links with a guy named Filippo Marino, who was a Florida-based associate of a CIA veteran named Louis Palumbo. And he also knew the former CIA Milan station chief, Robert Selden Lady, who was indicted by the Italians for kidnapping an imam off the street in Milan in 2003.
Remember that.
If the media really wanted to find out about what was behind Litvinenko, they only need to go to Miami. And I'm sure if they look hard enough, they're going to find Jeb Bush in that pile of trash somewhere.
For sure. All right. Appreciate your time, as always, Wayne Madsen, and look forward to talking with you again as this thing develops.
Okay, good to be with you.
The Iron Curtain is more than a barrier to freedom and truth. Behind it, the communists seek to hide their brutality and protect their organs of propaganda. They believe that if they can maintain a monopoly of information, they will ultimately succeed in brainwashing their 70 million captives. A mind with vivid memories cannot easily be overwhelmed. But a new generation is now approaching maturity who have no memories of liberty, who have never known freedom. The Soviets are trying to take from them their free will and conscience and subvert their minds with the distortions and lies of communism.
Experience teaches the working people whenever the bourgeois gentlemen refer to God and freedom, they actually think of factories and exploitation.
If there is a feature that best distinguishes American imperialism among its brethren, it is just its matchless arrogance and greed, its unceremonious ignorance of moral and legal norms, and of international public opinion when the interests of big business are concerned.
This is the official view of America, which for more than a decade the regime, radio, and press have presented to the people of Eastern Europe. This is the version taught in the schools, and this is the version that would eventually be accepted as true if we allow it to stand unchallenged. But it is challenged. We challenge it by building and supporting Radio of Free Europe.
Itt a Szabad Európa rádiója, a Szabad Magyarország hangja.
Tuke Radio Svobodna Evropa. Głosot na Svobodna Bulgaria.
Aici Radio Europa Libera. Vocea Romniei Libere.
Mówi Radio Wolna Europa, głos wolnej Polski.
Hlási sa vám hlas Slobodného Československa, rozhlasová stanica Slobodná Evropa.
These are the voices that destroy the communist monopoly of information. There is no clearer demonstration of this than RFE's role in one of the most significant events of our time. In February 1956, Comrade Khrushchev denounced the communist demigod Stalin before the inner circle of the Cominform. Knowing that an idol cannot be destroyed without damaging what the idol stood for, the rulers of the Kremlin kept the indictment secret to give their propaganda machine time to re-educate their subjects. But RFE did not give them time. It took but 1 hour from the moment RFE received a text of the speech to plan its strategy, translate the speech into each of its languages, and adapt its facilities to broadcast to each country the full text of the speech on two frequencies, while simultaneously beaming analysis and commentary on three others. RFE is the only organization in the free world equipped to so completely saturate the satellite nations.
Itt a Szabad Európa rádiója.
Radio Free Europe, the voice of free Hungary. You are listening now to some details of the speech of Mr. Khrushchev held on the...
This programming continued round the clock for 3.5 days in a display of broadcasting power new to the history of communication. It takes power to crack the Iron Curtain, and RFE has that power. From headquarters in Munich, 3,000 program hours are fed each week to transmitters in Holzkirchen, Biblis, and Lisbon. Specially designed directional antennas bounce the signals off the heaviside layer, concentrating them on selected areas. From 29 powerful transmitters, RFE completely blankets the captive nations. To keep its programs factual and timely, RFE news bureaus all over Europe send to Munich headquarters refugee reports and news on conditions and activities filtering through the Iron Curtain. RFE is the free press in exile for the satellite nations. Its effectiveness depends on maintaining one of the most extensive news gathering organizations in the world. To fully report the news of the West, RFE has access to all the free world's news and scans all its major publications. To expose the lies, distortions, and abuses of power of the Soviets and their puppets, 550 newspapers and periodicals from behind the Iron Curtain are screened by RFE's staff. The Soviet news agencies and the output of 44 leading communist radio stations are recorded and translated.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.